It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, but if we were going to be afraid, well, these would be the guys. If you're going to be afeared, you need to have somebody to be afeared of. I mean, give me something real. You know, no just pretend stuff. And, you know, give me somebody with, I don't know, the power of the universe, you know, with all the politicians in their pocket and the law enforcement and the ability to wage war on little old me if they feel like it, which I often do. We got enough, you know, bad guys to contend with here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. That, you know, I need one more. Yeah, what the heck. Let's go and have Kurt McKenzie. He's brought us up from the beginning of the Constitution, Alexander Hamilton wanting to get the first Bank of the United States, and then there was a second one. Andrew Jackson said, nope, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture, not playing. Goes to Abraham Lincoln. He needs to finance the war of aggression against the South, the Civil War. And so he has the greenbacks done. He's going to, you know, we're going to give you a paper that's going to be redeemable in gold upon demand, and then we kind of take the gold part out of it. Sound familiar? It's kind of like the silver certificate thing, and then all of a sudden the silver certificate part comes off, and it says Federal Reserve note, and the difference is what? So then after that, we have, the We Rule the Planet Bank people saying, you know, we don't need a powerhouse like the United States going around printing their interest-free sovereign government debt thing, you know, without us getting our cut. No, heck no. And we know how to buy us some politicians, so that's where we left off. Go ahead, Kirk. Bring us up to speed from there.
Okay, so basically the National Bank Act is really the major deal. This has done a number of things. Now, first off, it does not try and put into place a single central bank. Instead, it basically has the idea that you can have a number of national banks. In other words, the federal government can charter banks rather than states. They can bypass the states and charter these entities, give them 20-year charters. This legislation allowed these banks to collude. So although they weren't a single central bank, they had the appearance of being a diverse set of banks. In fact, they were colluding, and particularly in New York City, they were colluding and putting their power together. Now, Lincoln was no dummy. I think he realized that he had done a deal with the devil in order to finance the Civil War. And, you know, he basically came out and said in November 21st of 1864, I'll read you this quote, "I see in the near future a crisis approaching. It unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. The money power preys upon the nation in times of peace and conspires against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than a monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. It denounces as public enemies all who question its methods or throw light upon its crimes. I have two great enemies, the Southern Army in front of me and the financial institutions at the rear. The latter is my greater foe. Corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until the wealth is aggregated in the hands of a few and the republic is destroyed." He is assassinated 5 months later. I strongly suspect that he was going, at the end of the Civil War, had every intent to return to constitutional principles. And with that assassination, the North was now firmly in control of the country. Southern states were essentially not seated in Congress. And for the next 20 years or so, the North was almost completely in control of the legislation of the country. What then follows is a whole series of of financial legislative maneuvers intended to now empower them permanently on a permanent basis. So the National Bank Act expires in 20 years. That's that first period, that first 20 years, is called the first charter period of the National Bank. The second, the charter is up for renewal. Garfield is the president of the United States. He says whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. By the experience of commercial nations and all nations, ages, it has been found that gold and silver afford the only safe foundations for a monetary system. The chief duty of the national government in connection with the currency of the country is to coin money and declare its value. Grave doubts have been entertained whether Congress is authorized by the Constitution to make any form of paper money legal tender. He's assassinated, and the second charter period is affirmed by the Congress. That then comes up in 1902. That's the end of that second charter period. Now, we may remember that during the last half of the 1800s, this is the age of the robber barons. The banks that have been chartered by this National Bank Act become powerful. They double their money overnight, the way the money system works, and they go about taking over control of the resources of the country and the transportation systems. This is also a war to get rid of silver. They're in the Constitution, gold and silver are both considered to be legal currency. Gold is the money of the rich, and the silver is the money of the people. They go to war against silver. They essentially try and demonetize silver, get rid of what's called bimetallism, that policy of bimetallism, and make gold supreme. This leads us up to the famous quote in the election of 1900, Williams Jennings Bryan's Cross of Gold speech, saying that you essentially are not going to crucify the people on a cross of gold. He's running an election campaign against McKinley. McKinley wins, and silver loses, and so does, and free trade, which is another thing that's on the table at this point in time, also continues another northern policy. But McKinley is a mixed bag for the bankers. Although he's against silver, he's also against this concept of national banks. He says in a speech, his first inaugural speech on March 4th, 1897, our financial system needs some revision. Our money is all good now, but its value must not be further threatened. It should all be put upon an enduring basis, not subject to easy attack, nor its stability to doubt or to dispute. He's assassinated. Teddy Roosevelt becomes the president, and the third charter period is approved by Congress. Now, this process of getting these charter periods renewed is becoming kind of a messy process. So there is an objective to get rid of this and get a central bank in place on a permanent basis, which, of course, is the Federal Reserve Act. What leads up to that, if you want me to discuss that, we'll pick up on the panic of 1906, started by J.P. Morgan, or unless you've already covered that with your audience.
Well, it's more of the same. Ouch, quit it. We got all these problems, and they're caused because we don't have us in charge of all your money. Put us in charge of the money, and you won't have any problems anymore, pinky swear. You know, I get it. You know, the one thing that I did want to get into is we'll fast forward to JFK. You know,
that could be more 11,110.
Because you got all these assassinations. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, you could advocate pretty much anything or be against anything except the banks. You wake up dead when you do that. So that's becoming a common theme here. So that brings the thought, you know, JFK. And I remember, we're kind of only got a couple of minutes here before the break. But let me go ahead and preface my question, and then we can get to it when we come back. The JFK, he and his brother Robert, Attorney General, they come in, and they came in, you know, going up against Nixon, of all people. They had to know the other side was kind of, you know, got their own scum. So he gets in, and he's like, you know, we're going to get rid of this CIA thing. They're rogue. They're down. Oh, heck no. I have Department of Justice headed up by my brother. We got a short time to probably get this thing all cleaned up. Let's rock and roll. We got the Soviets we've got to deal with, on and on and on. But also, I see behind this whole thing is the banks. So wasn't there a period of time that we were going back to from Federal Reserve notes to silver, and there was actual silver involved for just a short time until his assassination or something?
That is correct.
Well, you know, go ahead and give me, you know, a 30-second teaser on that, and we'll get in more detail when we get back.
Okay, well, this starts on June 4th of 1963. JFK issues Executive Order 11,110, which basically starts to go back and create a currency that bypasses the Federal Reserve System, which is a debt-free interest rate currency, as you say, backed by the silver remaining in the Treasury Department.
And they didn't like that none too much. And a lot of the silver, that one of the reasons that they were able to have so much silver now to kind of buffer this manipulation to the point that I don't think they have it anymore, was there's enormous amounts of silver that were necessary in the refining of uranium in the Manhattan Project. When they were doing that, the conductive material, these big sinks or whatever they had of demand for silver, that's where all this surplus silver was, and they could have done it. Well, now it's been depleted. Where'd it go? I don't know. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance.
Yeah! It's over and over and over. It's the same old story, same old song and dance. You get put somebody in a position of power, do something about it, and represent the peoples. Boom! Done. Half their head gets blown off. So let's go ahead and pick it up from there. You know, we fast forward. We got somebody. Here it comes again. Here's another president saying, you know, we're going to take on this central banking kind of taking over, you know, bleeding the people dry kind of deal. And I'm going to do something about it. And they're going, oh, really? Well, what JFK did, you know, John F. Kennedy comes in. He says, I'm going to do something. And June of the year before he shot, what did he do? Kirk McKenzie.
Actually, the year he was shot, June 4th of 1963, is when he passes this executive order, 11,110, and orders the U.S. Treasury Department to go ahead and issue these silver-backed paper. Now, they don't actually say silver certificate on them, but they are redeemable in silver, and they are backed by the silver that's in the U.S. Treasury. And they issue some $4.3 billion worth, and these are in $2 and $5 denominations. He's assassinated on November 22nd. And the first act of Lyndon Baines Johnson, while now on what's called Air Force One at that point in time, ceases to print those, and they shortly are withdrawn from circulation by the banks.
Okay, wait a minute. Time out. Well, LBJ is on the freaking plane with Jackie sitting right there. That's the first thing he does is do away with this?
Yeah, that's my understanding. They basically stop printing these almost immediately, and they... banks pull them out of circulation.
Wow. Okay, and this news doesn't... I mean, I heard of this before. I mean, I understand that this... I'm referenced. I mean, that doesn't surprise me, you know, okay. But why is this not common knowledge? I mean, especially while we're doing all this in the Fed stuff and everything, we don't know that, you know, months after JFK says we're going to do...
Oh, days. Literally days. But here's I mean, this continues. So this is November 22nd, 1963, when he is assassinated. In March of the following year, so we're now talking about March 1964, there's silver certificate redemptions are halted. And in July 23rd of 1965, the Coinage Act eliminates the silver dollar. And then in 1968, on June 24th, all redemption in silver is halted. So silver essentially is put to bed once and for all immediately following his assassination.
Wow. Well, tell us about the Bretton Woods Agreement. What happened there?
Well, that's we went off the gold standard, right? Or
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Nixon, there, you know, got France. De Gaulle's going, hey, man, I know what you guys are doing, you scumbags. I want all my U.S. dollars, you know, here. I'm at the window. I want my gold now. Here, as good as gold, dollars as good as gold, we're going to find out. Give me. And Nixon goes, no.
Yeah, that's not quite correct, because the gold and the gold certificates were taken from the people by FDR 1 month after coming office.
Mm-hmm.
He came into office and 4 or 5 days later declares a state of emergency, and then under the authorization of this state of emergency, 1 month after he takes office, issues an executive order that demands that the people return all of their gold and the gold certificates, and 10 years in jail or $10,000 fine, which would be equivalent to, a quarter million to half a million dollars today, fine if you didn't do that. Now, one thing for people to understand is the Federal Reserve Banks are not government agencies. They are privately owned corporations, and his executive order did not demand that the people return the gold and the gold certificates to the Treasury Department. They were returned to the Federal Reserve Banks.
Wow. Okay.
But that
gold had been taken from the people back in 1933. So Americans were out of the loop, but the money was still redeemable, gold and silver, in foreign exchange. And what was happening, there was an outflow of gold, and it was getting to the point you just couldn't sustain it. Our, you know, reserves in the United States were being completely depleted. I don't think Nixon was trying to, personal opinion, I don't think he was being a bad guy here. I think that the...
He didn't have a choice.
He had no choice. All the momentum had been put into place prior to this.
Yeah, no, this was, you know, we have, that's what I'm saying, it was the government of France saying, you know what, we weren't part of this FDR confiscation, and our transaction is supposed to be redeeming gold, gimme. And they said, no. Now, let's go ahead and go back to FDR. FDR comes in, and all of a sudden, you got more banker stuff going on. They said, give us all of your gold, I guess, and silver. But as I remember, it was gold. And they go, give us all your gold. And this is, 32, 33?
Yeah, he comes into office on March 4th of 1933. And then on April 5th, he issues executive order number 6102.
And that's when you got Treasury agents sitting there at the bank helping you open your safe deposit box.
Yeah.
And then they take your gold.
Yep.
At $20.
And not only did that happen, they take your gold in 1933, but the year later they changed the value of the currency from $20 an ounce to $35.
Of course they did.
What that really means is the currency went from 1/20th of an ounce of gold to 1/35th of an ounce, or in other words, a 40% reduction of the value of the currency. So in effect, what they did is they confiscated 40% of the wealth of the nation.
No, they confiscated 40% of the wealth of the nation after they took their gold.
Yeah, my point is they had basically taken the gold, gave people paper,
yep,
Federal Reserve notes, and then they devalued the paper, the Federal Reserve notes. So in effect, it was a transfer of 40% of the wealth of the nation to the bankers.
And this is, okay, so I hope the audience can understand why I was so interested in before the Federal Reserve. It builds up. It's the same old song and dance. It's because they can. And they're going to keep doing this until they can't. And what now it's getting to the point they can't. It's just, you know, people are abandoning the entire system, at least in their heads. So now they're coming in, you know, it's going to get so bad, they're going to promise us what? What's the next incarnation of this? Is it going to be a global thing, IMF, you know, credit, what? What are we doing?
Well, I mean, they've already basically actually made the Federal Reserve even stronger. The SEC now can't even do a Freedom of Information request on the SEC. The Federal Reserve banks are printing money and refusing to tell the federal government where it's going and what corporations are receiving it. You know, they refuse to be audited. They've never been audited because they've been able to withstand, you know, and say, hell no, we're not going to do it. And they haven't been able, they've been able to control enough senators and congressmen to prevent that from occurring. So they've become all-powerful as a result of the legislation changes that were made here recently. Now the Federal Reserve Bank has known to create money not only for the Federal Reserve banks, but selected corporations that we don't even know about, give them preferential loans, give them preferential interest rates. They can do this to non-banking corporations as well. They have changed the way that the whole monetary system is based on. So now when Lincoln did this, the basis, what was supposed to guarantee those Federal Reserve or those bank notes back then, the national bank notes, was gold that the bankers would give and put into the Treasury. That was supposed to back it. Well, that's been degraded over a period of time to where now in the latest legislation they give us the junk mortgage bonds. They put those in the U.S. Treasury, and then they get fresh money out to go out and loan at interest. I mean, it's getting worse, and until the people begin to pay attention to this and begin to understand this, they're going to lock the door. Close the door and lock the key here pretty shortly, so people need to...
No. This is my final question. This is my final question. Here we go.
They will eliminate the dollar in favor of a world currency, and it'll be electronic, and they'll eliminate all paper and all transactions now. There'll be no anonymous transactions. Everything will be monitored and tracked.
That's the goal.
Anybody can be shut off by simply just disconnecting you from the bank system. In other words, freezing your account, and they can do that to a person, a corporation, or a country with equal ease.
And we're going all going camping. So, okay, that's the end game here, and what's going to happen? All speculation, but it's not none too good information for us. I can bypassing all the grammar. The bottom line is this: we're screwed.
Well, let me say that we're going to be screwed unless we take some quick action.
What?
I'll tell you, the people need to wake up.
The what?
We can change this fairly quickly.
Doing what?
If we elect a president that really understands what's doing and stands up, fine. We can
boom! Dead! Up. Now what?
What's that?
He's dead! Now what?
First thing he does is fire the Secret Service and bring in somebody else to protect his life.
Yeah, see, this is, it's going to come down to us just bypassing this whole central planning of government and the currency. Hey, thanks for spending time with us, Kirk. We'll have you back.
Can I give you a website link and
real
a couple
quick?
Well,
hold on. We'll put you in the next segment.
Okay.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free. God knows.
God knows.
God knows I want to break
free. No, I gotta break free. It's not like a choice, and I tell you how to do that. One, silver. This is a good segue. We'll get to you here in a second, Kirk, but I tell you, you give out your website, I want to give out a website. You ready? Here we go. DelValleySilver.com. DelValleySilver.com, as in Delaware Valley. DelValleySilver.com. Sponsor here on the show, and they got only $1.50 over spot. Do you know that, Bob? $1.50 over spot. So I'm like, yes. So we have a lot of opportunities, and it's already started in the Lovelutionaries. We are, that's how I found out about you, Kirk. It was some Lovelutionary out of San Francisco said, hey, Ernie, man, you got to talk to this Kirk guy. He had a lot of information we didn't know about. And the fact that I looked you up and said, hey, he's got, the history before the Federal Reserve, back to the Constitution with Hamilton, and I'm going, bring the boy on. That's exactly what I want to talk about. So we're already gearing up towards this. DelValleySilver.com has got some currency for us to be able to, barter and trade and deal with, and we're just, let me tell you what the solution to the Federal Reserve is. Ignoring the Federal Reserve. Now, they don't want to be ignored. They especially don't like being ignored. They will not be ignored. But, you just have a lot of the coming up generation understand what's going on is we are indebting ourselves with just creating money that has the need to create more money to pay the interest on the created money to these private guys. How does that work out in the end? It's called math. It doesn't. It doesn't. How do they get hold of you if they want to get more hold of you and more information on you, Kirk?
Okay, there's two things I'd like your listeners to do, because it's very critical that the public get informed of this, because there will be a tipping point, but more people have to understand this. So first is come to my website. That's silentnomorepublications.com. Silentnomorepublications.com. The books and some materials are available there. The second thing I'd ask everybody to do is to go to YouTube, and I produced a seminar called Why We're in So Much Debt. Why We're in So Much Debt. And that's a one-hour seminar that covers two of the six chapters of my book, and I hope that everybody and every one of your listeners goes and watches that.
Go to freedomsphoenix.com right now, and you look at this afternoon show archive, and you'll see all of the videos right there on today's archive show and all the links that he talked about. FreedomsPhoenix.com, Ernest Hancock Afternoon Show, August 23rd. Everything he's talked about right there, click on it. Boom, shakalaka. We're done. And I'll let you go ahead and give those out again if they want to go directly to you there, Kirk. Go ahead and give out the two sites again.
Okay, SilentNoMorePublications.com, and the video is Why We're in So Much Debt, and that's We're, WE'RE, Why We're in So Much Debt. It's
on YouTube.
Our explanation.
Well, thanks, Kirk, for coming on. I'm sure we'll have you back in the future, because this was good information. It filled in a big window that we needed to get taken care of. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, I'm glad we got that. You know, that's good information to have. Let me go ahead and plug in Mr. Anderson here. Mr. Anderson, how are you?
Very good, Mr. Hancock. How are you today?
Mr. Bob Anderson. You know, if I want to make sure that, you know, somebody else knows why I woke up dead one day for doing away with the Federal Reserve, it's, you know, Bob's one of the nodes. I'm like, hey, Bob knows. Oh, he's dead too. Okay. Well, you know, so he needs to pass it on to a bunch of nodes he knows so they can, you know, they need to kill at least 5,000 of my closest friends. So this is, and that includes all you in the audience. They're going to track and hunt you down. This is, you, if you go up against the big bad guys, who are the big bad guys? The big bad guys are the ones that make all the money from you. They are the ones that profit the most. They're the ones that exist in the fringes. They're the ones in the shadows. They're the ones that make sure that their henchmen and their veneer that goes over all their crap is nice and polished. They're the ones that make sure they got the talking heads and the faces in front of them. They're the ones that can control the lamestream media, the media that's so last century. They're the ones that have the people that pass the legislation, does the contracts, signs the bills, pays the invoices. These are the people that profit from the creation of an ability to take your money. It's just, how did the money in your wallet become theirs? Well, first, it becomes theirs by becoming not yours anymore. You think it's more complicated? It's that simple. First, it has to become not yours. Then, through various machinations and accounts and, you know, invoicing and contracts and programs and voting and signing and so on, it eventually becomes theirs. It gets to the point, a lot of times they make it even easier than that. It's just theirs.
Yeah, they don't even have to. They take it from your grandkids. It's called, like, the stimulus bill.
Yeah, they just indebted it. You know, it's like when they did the gold thing in 33 under FDR. They go, you know what? It's just ours now. You got to turn it into the Federal Reserve. They got all the gold. What did they give you back? Paper. And then they devalued the paper. You know, it went to $35, 40%. Just, you know, off the top, thanks. Nice little haircut you got. What do you think they did with the pension funds and everything that's going on now? Oh, that's a good thing to talk about. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about Bob. Bob and I have been activists since back in the day. That printing press that we had back there, the OABDEC 360 you keep hearing us talking about, one of our first pieces of equipment we got back in 94, along the folders, Bob bought that. You know, because the media was so bad, we couldn't get any truth out there. So we just started making our own flyers like we were 1776. We just go, you know what? You put a flyer of truth in front of somebody, at least they know what's on the flyer, big, bold headlines, and we filled blank space. So we do all this stuff all that had big impact. You know, we had some fun. So from the beginning, we understood all this about freeway blogging with signs on overpasses and all the signage that we do in the internet pages and all. We knew this back in the day. We were these young kids that are around doing this stuff now. That was Bob and I back when we used to have hair. You know, so that we don't think we know. We already know. We know what they want, too. They want the same thing we did. We just want the truth. We like to share the truth and highlight who the freaking liars are. So that's what we do. Well, as time goes on and we, you know, grow in our businesses or up in our corporations and so on, you know, Bob's a big Uber nuke tech supervisor, kind of make it go where we got power here in Arizona from Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant, you know, and he lives out there and he gets his own well from underneath the power plant. So I guess it's safe. Now, is that when you start going bald? Anyway, so what happens is, you know, Bob has a good chunk of money that's going into a pension fund. Good chunk of money. You got 401ks and IRAs and all this other kind of stuff. How have you been managing that, knowing what's coming? I never asked you about this. How you doing, man?
I've limited the amount that I've put in there down to the absolute minimum that's matched because, you know, if you don't at least get the matching money, you know, you're missing out on, you know, free money. And the rest, I just, you know, I put it places where I know where it's at.
Well, you know, there was an accumulation. We had other friends that would have all this because I went to my boys. I go, you know, this stuff, it's just going to be gone. No matter what dollar amount this says is in there, that don't mean nothing. It's just going to be gone. So they cashed out and bought silver. Well, now Corsair just had his second child Saturday, and they are moving into a house at the end of the month, and they used the appreciation in his silver he's accumulated, or at least retained the value of, you know, his silver for the down payment and everything, all the costs of getting the home. So I'm like, cool, smart kid, you know, and he's only 22 now.
Did they give much pain and agony about that?
Cause when yes, they did.
When I bought my house, I cashed in some gold, and they had the veterans minister is like, where did you source this money? The fact that I, like, you know, had it buried in my backyard or something like that was totally unacceptable to them, that I somehow had money that hadn't been in a bank where they could put their finger on and go, that's where that money came from.
Well, tell us how that went. You know, Corsair had to do the same kind of thing. He had to go to a because I wanted it. You know, I had friends that you would have bought it.
I would have bought it.
It was that, you know, you get more than what the dealer would have.
As soon as the break comes, I'm going to give you a grief about it.
Exactly. You know, this is what happened. Everybody and their grandma say, hey, man, they knew Corsair was going to be selling his silver. And it was like, it wasn't a lot. I mean, it was enough. It's like $5,000, $6,000 worth. It's 300 ounces, more than 300 ounces. So he had, you know, a good chunk of silver. Well, that I wish that to be my silver. In fact, he bought a bunch off of his brother, Forrest, when he sold his silver to get all armed up. I mean, he's got pretty guns, man. He went and got the top of the line AR and his Kember 45, and he thought it would have been better off he'd go ahead and get gunned up first. And
everybody in the audience hearing that word silver a lot?
Yeah, there's a lot of silver going back and forth. Silver, guns, food. I mean, this kind of stuff is what we're dealing in. So we kept it in the family. Well, of course, I'm like, you do this. If I'm not, I know Bob will buy it, Eric will buy it, everybody, we'll all buy the silver from him and give him more than he would get at a coin shop. No, they don't like that. And you went through this when you bought your home. Yep, we're going to talk about it, how they social and economically engineer you out of your precious metals. It's just commonplace.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, and I know you're in here too, Mr. Robert Anderson, Lunatic Fringe. You know, that's one, that song that when I first started doing radio back in 03, Bob goes, you got to have this song as your opening, you know, and we did that, and that was part of the opening of the show before we started doing Morpheus. We are still here! And Red Rider, Bob Anderson, he got his wish. There, I did that for you. Aren't you happy?
Thanks, Ernest.
go ahead and tell us about when you got your first home. This was, when did you do that? That was in the late 90s?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, probably somewhere early 90s or so, mid 90s.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, mid 90s. So you go in, you're saying, I'm going to go buy a house. I'm making a decent living. I got money, and they want you to track all your money. You're going to buy a house. We want to know where all your money
is. Well, you know, I was part of the Lunatic Fringe way back then, and I had already started accumulating some metals because, you know, anybody who was really paying attention with the way the government spends money and how they conduct business realizes that it was, you know, that non-tenable. This was never going to be able to last.
Yeah, we were crazy people that bought silver back when it was $2 and $3 and stuff, yeah. And gold at, you know, $200, $300 and stuff like that.
Correct.
We were crazy people.
And so I had some of this, you know, gold that I had, and, you know, I wanted to buy a house and real estate and land and property. That's another one of those good investments. So I didn't mind cashing in some of my metals for property, and unless you grow food on it. So I went in, I basically had to cash in, I don't know, it was a couple of $1,000 worth of money I had to come up with. And, you know, when you fill out a housing application, you have to tell them all your bank accounts and where you have all your money stashed and where your job is and tax forms and all the other stuff. And I had to come up with a couple of grand. So I went down to the metal dealer and cashed in a couple of rounds of gold that I had. Walked in, put the money down, said, okay, here we go. And they said, fine. They took it. And about 3 days later, they're like, they want to know where you got that. And I go, what do you mean where I got that? It's, you know, it's green. I gave it to you. It spends, you know, it's money. And they go, yeah, but you got to tell us where you got it. I go, I get it because I work. They go, no, what account did it come out of? And they had a real hard time understanding the fact that I could possibly have that kind of money just laying around my house. I didn't keep it in a bank where they could keep track of it. And it was about a week's worth of, you know, ouch, quit it. They really wanted to sell the house. But bottom line came down, they weren't happy the fact that, you know, I could possibly be one of these people that had money that they did not know about.
Now, I remember when this happened. You know, and I remember what you had to go through. I remember that you had to show that you took it out, the money out of your retirement or something, that you went down to this place and bought this metal, and that you went over here and sold it back.
Right. They had to, you had to show them a source that money.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you what the difference is. A lot of people don't understand this. When you do that, what do they want? They want the difference is gains, and they want tax on it. So when you go out and you buy all this metal and everything, and you got a record of it, or where the money came from that you got it, and then you go sell it, they're going to want the difference, you know, taxable. That was part of the health care bill. Starting January 2012, any money that you get by doing precious metals with a coin dealer, over $600, I think it is, that you have to get a 1099 form.
Aggregate, not even just one shot. Aggregate of $600 a year.
What?
I think it's any time if you do more than $600 worth of business over the course of the year, you have to provide a form. So it's not like I can go do $599 today and $599 next week.
Man, I'm sure they got a law for doing that, too. Structuring. So we understand. You know, Bob and I have been doing this. We were these young guys are around here all the time doing different stuff and projects and everything. That was Bob and I, you know, back, you know, almost 20 years ago. So we're 15, 20 years we've been doing this together. And so we don't think we know. We know. And when Bob decided, you know, yep, I'm going to raise a family and go out and loan Prairie, what'd you do?
What do you mean?
No, when you went and moved out to Tonopah.
I went out there and, you know, bought some land that I could grow food on and have an easy commute back and forth to work and put a house with a well and we can grow, you know, grow what we need to. I got an off-grid home, so I, for the most part, I can sit there and make my own energy and live a comfortable life without having to be too beholden to too many people, and hopefully I'm going to be retired in a couple of years, and I won't be having to be beholden to the government for much anything after that when I'm not making an income.
Well, you know, I tell you, he has, how big is your home? It's at least, what, 2,400 square feet or something?
Yeah, about that.
So 2,400 square foot home, nice 2x6 construction. It's got a, you know, nice wood deck on it, got a backyard fence. You're on acreage. I mean, you got what, 6, 7, 8 acres or something?
Yeah, just a little over 8 acres.
So he's got room. You know, he's got a well. He's got his own solar. He's got his own windmill. He's got his battery. He's got his diesel backup. Heck, he's even got a propane converted backup generator from a police department in California. And then he got on eBay. And then you have a septic. You know, you got satellite television,
satellite internet,
cell phone, you know, Skype. You know, he is totally
a 700-foot long driveway with a gate.
And so this is, we're going, oh, when I grow up, I want to be like Bob. So a lot of the things that he's done on the actual, we've done actual video of his facility out there in how he developed it. Now, how much would you have done different in the future? You would have done less of what and more of what?
You know, if anybody was going to do it, I'd recommend not trying to do it in the desert. You know, I mean, if you are stuck in the desert because of where I work, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, it's one of the more hostile environments to try to do an off-grid setup in. I mean, if you could find something that was a little more mitigating in, you know, the day-to-day temperatures, extremes, and things like that, it'd be much easier to do. I could probably do away without my diesel and be totally energy independent from what I could produce right on the homestead.
If you didn't have what? How many months out of the year do you got to run the diesel part of the day to fund the?
But 2.5, 3 months.
For
the air conditioning.
You know, and that's life support here. So, yeah. I mean, you know, we definitely, you know, filling up the diesel tank for that one. But other than that, I mean, you have, you know, full refrigerator and freezer ranges.
And even the price of that for the amount of, if you take it and put it out over the cost of the year, it's no more than, you know, somebody with a reasonable electric bill here anywhere in the valley. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm, you know, doing extraordinary financial measures to be able to pull this off. It's, you know, the rest of the year, it's like having a really bad electric bill for 3 months and then having no electric bill for the rest of the year. So it's really not that bad. But
and if you're willing to suffer in the summer, and which you may have to someday,
it's livable. We actually have some, you know, other ways of getting by. We could get really skinny out there and probably get by without even having to do the diesel if we wanted to. But, you know, we'd take a hit on our lifestyle. Right now, we don't have to, so we're not gonna.
Yeah, that was kind of the deal with your wife. She was like, "Hey, man, don't make me suffer."
Yeah, you know, that was the promise.
So now we have, a lot of young guys. We were big Second Amendment advocates and all that kind of stuff. And I don't even know about you. I think you had one little dinky piece of crap handgun, and I had nothing. We went years. We're big advocates. Safe. Second Amendment is for everyone. You know, don't take our guns and everything. We go to these protests, and my friends would be like, you're embarrassing, Ernie. Here, we'll give you a Makarov or something. Mark gave me one. So I'm just going, because we understood the principle. It wasn't the fact whether I, you know, had the resources or thought I had to have a gun to, you know, prove my manhood. You know, that wasn't the point. We understood the principle behind this, that them coming to take away our means to defend ourselves against a tyrannical government. Heck, that's how you know they're tyrannical. So we're just, no, no, no. And then as time went on and we had, you know, more resources and you won more raffles, you know, we accumulated enough to where, you know, it makes a nice presentation for when the man comes, you know, and they lay it all out on the carpet, you know. So, I mean, it's not like this big giant armory that you talk about. But if you're from Chicago, Gary Franchi came from Chicago, you know, Restore the Republic guy. And he stayed for like a week at our home doing, you know, some stuff, a video and his movie. And he's visiting. He came in. I go, okay. Here are the firearms. Here's one by here. Here's the one over here. Oh, my God. So I took him up to Ben Avery, the range, and went and just took everything and said, okay, we're going to let you shoot one of everything. And he was in heaven, man. Oh, man. I tell you what he liked. He liked the 308 Fal. That, you know, he definitely liked that one. And that was something that I've always wanted to have. You know, that was a friend of ours, Mike Duggar. He said, you know, he bought them in units of like three. They were, what they do is when they ship them back from Europe, they take a torch and they cut it right through the receiver. So you got to get all these new parts and everything to rebuild it. It's just stupid laws for stupid things. It's just craziness that they do this stuff. So what happens when they pass these kinds of legislation to make it to where you can't, or it's very difficult to get certain kinds of firearms, what do you want? Those firearms. So you go and you get them. Every time they pass some kind of gun, or even the threat of a gun control, people arm up like you wouldn't believe in this country. And so, and every time it was with us, it was the Brady Bill. Then it was the assault weapon ban, the crime bill. It was a terrorist, blah, blah, blah. It was, what was it, Oklahoma City, 9/11. I mean, on and on. Obama getting elected. Every time I've bought any kind of firearms or anything, it was due to my perceived threat of the government or an action they tried to take so that I couldn't get them. So what was the end result? I remember Dianne Feinstein was on 60 Minutes when they were doing this very thing, saying that all these gun control measures has caused the American people to purchase a whole bunch of guns. And she was complaining, well, that violated the spirit of the legislation. We wanted to take them away. And I mean, she's out in front on this stuff. We're going, okay, that'll make gun sales go down, right? You know, so this is, and we've come up against a lot of corrupt politicians here. When we come back in the next hour, that's what we're going to talk about on the air. I haven't really told Bob what we were talking about in the first half hour, and I want to make sure that you guys know that we're going to be on the tippy top of the list here. And I know the police, I know the people in government, I know a lot of the press, I know, and they respect us, they know we're sincere in this thing and so on, but, you know, in the end, presidents get bullets to the head for going up against the wrong people. That's what happens. That is what happens. And the only way I know to remain breathing in and out is that they'd have to take out all of you, too. I'm going to tell you everything I know because I'm selfish and I want to keep breathing in and out and let you guys worry about the ramifications. But I will let you know what's going on here in Phoenix when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my friend sitting in, Bob Anderson. We'll be right back.